Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cara, acne can be tough. Whether your kid is just starting to get breakouts or has been struggling with them for years, there's a great product that can help.
Phyla is the ultimate game changer. It tackles acne right at its root cause, rebalancing the skin's bacteria and packing it with probiotic phages.
Phyla harnesses the superpowers of probiotics, tiny warriors targeting and wiping out the acne-causing bacteria. In studies, Phyla slashed acne-causing bacteria by a whopping 90%.
Phyla doesn't just fix acne you can see. It stops new breakouts in their tracks. It has no harsh chemicals and won't irritate or dry most skin. Phyla's three-step system is like a dermatologist-approved magic potion. Cleanse, apply serum, and moisturize twice a day.
As a special treat for our listeners, you can grab 25% off your first order of Phyla. Head over to phylabiotics.com, enter code PUBERTY at checkout, and kickstart your family's journey to acne-free skin. Check out the link in our show notes for quick access.
Welcome to This Is So Awkward, the podcast. I'm Dr. Karin Adderson.
And I'm Vanessa Kroll Bennett. Everyone on Earth goes through puberty, so it shouldn't be cringy.
With science, guidance, and humor, we cover all of the physical, emotional, and social changes that happen between the ages of 8 and 18.
We have tons more on lessawkward.com, where members can get answers to all of their questions all of the time. This stage of life is awkward for everyone involved, but it doesn't have to be.
Okay, buckle up and let's get into today's episode.
Hi, Cara.
Happy National Sense of Smell Day, Vanessa.
Woohoo! We're going to get into some fun today.
Yeah. Well, for those who are sniffing out something new, we have a lot of information about smell. And we also have a little news to drop about our new membership. We have a membership.
So do you like how Cara did that? Like, if I was doing it, I'd be like, hey, everyone, we have a membership. It's brand new. We've been busting our butts for months to launch it. And Cara's like, we have a little news to share. I'm going to so subtly and quietly share it. So
that's why we're partners.
With both of our styles, the point is we have launched Less Awkward, the membership, where you can get all of your puberty questions answered for you, for your kid, for the kids in your class, for the kids you coach on a team, for your grandchildren. It is all of our content. And if you've been a longtime listener and follower of our work, you know that is a ton. I decline to use profanity there, a ton of content. And it is every podcast, every newsletter, it is every social media short, every video clip, everything we've ever done in a searchable library. And
wait, before you do the end, in a searchable library that is visual and beautiful to look at,
which makes Cara happy.
I'm all about the user experience. So when you're quickly looking for a piece of information to save you when you're in a conversation about acne or porn or anything, and you quickly need to reference it. Now it is easy. Now we can do the and da, da, da.
An AI bot trained on all of our content, including our books and podcast transcripts and newsletters and it answers your questions in our voice. So if you love listening to this podcast,
you are going to love the Awkward Bot. So here's how that works. When you become a member, you go on to a little prompt that says, ask the Awkward Bot, and you type in your question about puberty or anything related to puberty, any of the stuff we talk about. And the bot really does give you thoughtful and funny answers and lots of references. So it points you to podcasts, to chapters we've written, to social media posts. It's such a fun resource and an amazing reservoir of answers, again, 24/7. So that's our exciting news. But now, Vanessa, now I think we should get into smells.
Yeah. So if you follow us on social media, you know that we were returning guests recently on the Drew Barrymore Show, and that recording opened with a question from none other than Maya Rudolph, my absolute hero in every facet of life, who recorded a question for us. And she could have asked us anything, right? She plays Connie the Hormone Monster on Big Mouth. She's raising four children. She could have picked any topic. And the topic she picked, which reflects the questions we get all the time, is how do I tell my kid they smell?
So we're going to talk a little bit about that in the context of not just why people smell, because those of you who know us know the answer to that, but also sort of all the really tangible strategic things you can do to manage smells. And then when you don't want to manage smells, right? When some people are very, very comfortable with certain types of smells, and we're going to get into all of it. I do want to point out that on the social media clip that the Drew Barrymore Show released, it shows one of my favorite moments from sharing the stage with her, which was when she hoisted Vanessa's arm straight up into the air and nosedived into her armpit, taking the biggest inhale. I mean, you would have thought it was a bouquet of flowers, and it was an amazing moment. If you have not seen the clip, it is worth watching. A million people have seen it already and counting.
I mean, you can look at our at less.awkward, our rebranded Instagram account, because we're all into rebranding this moment.
No,
in
what
time.
We're into, Vanessa, is making this stage of life less awkward. Everyone get it.
Yeah. So Drew stuck her face in my armpit, and thank God, because I am actually someone who has BO. I have a mother who like never smells. I have a child, one of my children, never smells. I smell. I have BO. And in recent years, and we can have Mary Claire back on the podcast to talk about if menopause has anything to do this, my smells have changed. So we can talk about that. And luckily, before we went on stage, I put more deodorant on, knowing that we were going to be under hot lights and the adrenaline was going to be flowing and I was going to like sweat more. And then she sticks her face in my armpit and she's the most adorable, delicious human being. And so I was like, even if I did have the worst BO in the world, I knew she would never judge me because she's like the nicest person. But luckily, I had actually put more deodorant on. So let's start, Cara, with...
Can we start with sort of how one smells? Do you want to do just like a little bit? Not like how you smell in the world.
The sense
but like,
of smell.
Yes, the sense of smell, like how it works a little bit.
Sure.
Should we
I don't
do
think
just,
we've ever actually talked about that on the podcast.
No. And, you know, I think it's really important to recognize that during COVID, like let's flash back a couple of years, one of the hallmark symptoms of COVID infection was loss of smell.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people who have never experienced loss of smell didn't have a deep appreciation for what goes along with loss of smell. But of course, anyone who had that symptom along with their COVID learned very quickly that often when you lose your sense of smell, you either lose or dampen significantly your sense of taste.
Right.
And so there's this whole ritual, right, that we have around eating that does involve the olfactory system. That's the part of the nervous system that actually engages in smell. And it's a very important part of turning the brain on, telling, you know, sort of signaling the brain, we're getting ready to eat. There are all these smells coming at us. Do you ever notice if you walk into a bakery or into an ice cream shop or into wherever, and there's a classic smell associated with that place, maybe in the ice cream shop, it might be making a waffle cone or whatever it is, that you suddenly start craving the thing, even if you didn't before you
walk in. I mean, Subway and Krispy Kreme pump out a smell onto the street to lure people into their shops. I happen to not find the Subway, you know, sandwich company, not the Subway.
You don't like the smell of the New York Subway. I mean, What's wrong with you, Vanessa? It smells great.
It's delicious. But I'm sure it's proven that it works to pump that smell out and lure people in to buy a donut or a sandwich.
There are lots of stories written about open houses where people are trying to sell their house and they have baked the smell.
Cookies.
Yes, baked cookies or an apple pie. It's just fascinating. And of course, you know, smell triggers memory for us. Right. So there is an olfactory sense that's very, very strong. So just a quick top line. This is not a science lesson today. It's just like a little biological reminder. Olfaction is the medical or scientific word for the sense of smell. And when you look on sites like the NIH site, National Institutes for Health site, you know, the description is that olfaction detects and discriminates odors as well as social cues, which influence our innate responses. And our sense of olfaction, the human sense of olfaction, is much weaker than the canine sense of olfaction and many other animals. You know, every morning when I walk my dogs, I am amazed at how into the smells they are about of everything around them, both, you know, smells that seem lovely, but also smells that I'm really glad we as humans don't lean into, like where other dogs pee.
Do you know that Martin Scorsese, our dog who loves you, Cara, do you know that Marty is a Italian truffle dog and they are used in Italy to sniff out truffles, to find truffles?
I'm just taking the compliment from Marty because
I know because
right
Marty likes about 4.5 people in the entire world. And
I'm a full one of them.
And you're a full one, which means a few people in my house are making up half of a person. And Marty, fascinatingly enough, seems to have inherited none of the skills of his ancestors because I could literally drop a full steak on the kitchen floor and he'd be like looking around for it for like 20 minutes before finding it.
Meanwhile, my dog, Pete, would be on a plane flying across country to eat that steak so fast.
Yes. So we don't have as strong, but we still have pretty strong.
Here's another fun fact about olfaction. I just love saying that word. The olfactory nerves regenerate. The olfactory nerves
regenerate,
which is really interesting. And there's a lot written about this in super sciencey journals. And there are people who are born with no sense of smell, or, you know, some of these cells can be destroyed permanently, but they can also regenerate. And, you know, I've read about different timelines, but it does seem that regeneration happens. I mean, it's crazy to me, every 30 to 60 days. So like on a 6-week cycle, you have turnover of the olfactory cells, which actually in the context of COVID makes a lot of sense because when you think about people, you know, who lost their sense of smell with COVID, some of them regained their sense of smell immediately, but many of them, it took a month or two, right? And that seems to be the renewal cycle for olfactory nerves. So, I mean, that's really incredible.
But Cara, one of the things that doesn't change even when you regenerate those cells is that certain odors are not ever delicious smelling.
Well, that's true. But then there's this phenomenon that happens. So in pregnancy is a great example. There are stages in life and experiences where, like, during pregnancy, the sense of smell for some people, this is why you're uhing right now. The sense of smell for people is so hyper attuned. I used to remember this, like I can flash back to it right now. I could smell chicken from a block away and the smell never bothered me before and it never bothered me after. But during my pregnancy, Vanessa, I actually couldn't tolerate the smell of chicken.
The taco truck 2 blocks from my house emitted a smell of beef. I couldn't bear the smell of beef when I was pregnant. And the smell of beef wafting up 3 blocks made me so ill. I had to reroute my walk to avoid going near the taco truck. So yes, there are moments when your smell is heightened. As we age, I don't know if it lessens.
Well, loss of smell can be associated with aging, you know, a less intense sense of smell, but it can also be associated with certain illnesses beyond infections like COVID. Remember, any upper respiratory infection is going to cause mucus and congestion in the nose and in the airways, and that will blunt your sense of smell and your sense of taste. But then there are other things like Parkinson's disease is associated with loss of smell, things like Alzheimer's disease. So these are things, you know, we don't take loss of smell lightly, actually.
And is menopause associated with a...
Oh, I wish Mary Claire was sitting here to answer this. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
We have to go back and reread the new menopause. And
exactly.
See if she answers it.
But it is important to, you know, to not make light of loss of smell and not ignore it. And if you're concerned or if it's something that you're experiencing beyond being associated with a viral or bacterial illness, you'll want to reach out to your healthcare provider. I also find it interesting that a person's smell is like a fingerprint. It really is. It's very unique.
Right. Their own, the odor they emit, not their ability, their olfactory ability.
Yes. No, the odor a person emits, which is so interesting because you're going to do a quick mini lesson on body odor to catch up. Any listeners haven't listened to an episode about this before, haven't seen one of our social media posts about it, or haven't read the chapter in our book, because this is one of the most fun things we do. So you're going to do that mini lesson in a second, but your mini lesson is going to be grounded in the fact that our bodies, our skin is populated by a microbiome, by bacteria that are healthy, that are supposed to be there. And the bacteria play a very, very significant role in smell. And I'm going to tee up your lesson by saying, have you ever noticed that when you take an antibiotic orally, so this is a medicine that wipes out the bacteria, not just on your skin, but also in your gut and in the place where it's causing a problem, wherever you have that acute infection. But the antibiotic shifts the way you smell your personal odor. And it also changes, I'm going to get gross here for a second, the smell of a person's poop.
I did not know that.
Yes, it's amazing because it shifts the microbiome. It wipes out. And this actually, a lot of researchers started from this point when they started to explore, like, are antibiotics good for you or bad for you? And there's a lot to say about that. We could do a whole episode on that. But one must acknowledge when they're prescribing antibiotics that there are bigger downstream effects than just solving the acute infection. Now, solving the acute infection might be life-saving. So this is not to diminish that, but there are bigger downstream effects. And one of them is really shifting the way the microbiome is in the gut, and it changes things like the smell of bowel movement. So sort of with that base and knowledge, will you do your quick lesson?
Yeah, you don't want me to spend the next half an hour of what my dinner table conversation sounds like with me. One of my kids sent the family group chat today a visual of a tire being dragged through a pipe to clear that pipe out, and the downstream impact of mud coming out of that pipe the other end, and indicated that that is what one of his siblings' regular poops look like.
So, thanks for that visual.
Yeah, I just wanted to share it with all of you because I know you feel affirmed if 90% of the conversations in your house are about poops or farts, as they are in my house. So people have often heard about the gut microbiome, and we have an amazing episode coming up with Elisa Song, who's an integrative pediatrician, and we'll talk extensively about the gut microbiome, and it's a popular topic. I think fewer people have heard about the skin microbiome, but if you listen to our Phyla ads, you will know that we talk about it and really believe in the science of the importance of the skin microbiome. And one of the reasons that's the case, Kara, as you mentioned, it is healthy that there's bacteria living on our skin. And when kids go through adrenarche, cue all of our amazing listeners who know that adrenarche is not puberty, it's a coincidental process, often coincidental, not always coincidental. where the adrenal glands release DHEA and DHEAS, hormones that tell the sebaceous glands to produce thicker, oilier sweat, as well as produce hair in new places and thicker, darker hair where it didn't grow before. But we're going to focus on the thicker, oilier sweat, which, Cara, as you wrote in our book, it is a feast for the bacteria living on the skin. You wrote about it so elegantly. It's one of my favorite lines in the book. And the bacteria eat that thicker, oilier sweat, and then they, and this is when I normally pause in our keynote, as everyone waits with bated breath, they fart it out. And the body odor under the arms and the foot stink and in the groin are the bacteria off-gassing of the feast of the sweat they have ingested. And I wonder how and why people have different scents, right? Because, like, I mean, ask your kids. Everybody's fart smells different, and kids tend to like the way their own fart smell, and people's body odor smells slightly different, and people's foot stinks smell slightly different. So there's variation, not just in a person's innate scent, but also in their off-gassing scent. And so also hair, like the scalp, when it gets greasier and oilier, has a certain scent. I can always like smell my kids' heads and be like, oh, time to shower. So that's all bacteria off-gassing of this new, exciting kind of sweat that is released from the pores all over the body. And you've heard in the past, there's some we've talked about a little bit, how to talk about it, but we're going to go deep on the topic of how to handle it, how to address it, how to prevent it, how to clean it, how to rearrange your life a bit or help kids rearrange their lives a bit so that there's more air, there's less odor, if there is odor, how to get rid of the odor, and sort of the different corners of life that allow us to address those beautiful bacteria farts.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Cara, lately I have been lying awake at night. I'm physically exhausted, but I can't sleep because my mind is so wired with everything going on between work and my family. So I've added Magnesium Breakthrough to my nightly routine, and it actually helps calm my mind. It helps me get better sleep, and I wake up feeling better rested. I'm less cranky, and I'm more patient with my family and with you.
Oh, I've noticed. And it's because, unlike other magnesium supplements that might give one or two formulations of magnesium, Magnesium Breakthrough has 7. That's why you're sleeping so well and waking up refreshed. Now, dietary supplementation is always best, Vanessa. So that means eating your minerals and vitamins is the best way to get them in. But if you can't or you don't get enough, Magnesium Breakthrough is the way to go. It can also help digestion, though too much helps your digestion too much, which is not a good thing. It can support muscle recovery, so bye-bye, Charlie horses. And it helps build dense bones, which is especially important for women approaching and in menopause.
We have an exclusive offer for our listeners. You can go to buyoptimizers.com/puberty, buyoptimizers.com/puberty. And you can use the code PUBERTY10 during checkout to save 10%. That promo code is PUBERTY10 at buyoptimizers.com/puberty. Your body and brain and family and business partner will thank you.
Vanessa, we literally have 3 minutes to eat lunch every day. I am not joking. And the challenge is how to make it delicious and healthy and still fit into that tiny window. Our answer is Factor's ready-to-eat meals. They have been a godsend.
We throw our Factor meals in the microwave. It takes 2 minutes. And out comes a gorgeous, fresh, never frozen meal. We both love the tamale vegetarian one. It's delish. There's a ton of options every week. There's 60 add-ons, breakfast, snacks, beverages. I love doing the wellness shots with my kids. They think it's hilarious, and I know they're getting vitamins and minerals in their bodies.
So get meals on your table or at your desk in 2 minutes or less. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning. You can customize with flexibility to get as much or as little as you need, and you can press pause or reschedule depending upon your lifestyle.
So to order, go to factormeals.com/puberty50 and use the code puberty50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That code is puberty50 at factormeals.com/puberty50 to get 50% off your first box, 20% off your next box. And I am going to go do that right now because I need more Factor meals in my refrigerator.
I want to start with the people who are thinking, but I want to be all natural. And I want my kids to feel no shame, no blame, no judgment around this. So to those who approach their own body scent in that way, great, you do you. The reason I think it's important for us to start there is this is not an episode about how one has to fix a smell problem. That would be judgmental. And that is more than judgmental. It's sort of generalizing that everyone perceives odors, their odors or other people's odors as problematic. And there's nothing problematic about it. I mean, what's incredible is this is just a stamp. It's a smell. It's what your body is producing. The reason we're addressing it is a lot of people don't like how they smell. I mean, you said at the top of the podcast, it was very interesting, Vanessa, you talked about your own odor and it wasn't like you were saying, I love this. You were talking about it in a way that like, you don't like it. It's something that you would like to address and you do address. I've been in lots of rooms with you and I've never noticed it. So you address it beautifully.
Apparently successfully.
Ask Drew Barrymore. But I think it is important to recognize that for millennia, there were really very minimal ways to address the odors that humans emit. And it didn't stop civilization from progressing and it didn't stop people from connecting emotionally, socially, romantically. So I want to make sure we set the stage that we're not sort of problematizing this, but we are owning the fact that when we are in classrooms with kids, when we are in conversation with them, when they are in our homes, sitting around our kitchen islands, one of the topics that comes up all the time is how they feel about the way they smell or other people smell. And so that's the purpose of this conversation.
And any of you who've been caring for kids long enough know, the minute you're like, this isn't important to me. I don't care about this. This isn't a big deal. Why are people making such a thing? Is the very minute a kid is going to turn around to you and say, this is important to me. I don't want to smell the way you smell, or I do care what other people think of my body odor or insert other things. So one of the hardest things of parenting kids this age is that they reject our views on things and they push back on them and they're not always nice about it or respectful about it. And so we have to be prepared to kind of create a landscape in which many different views are welcome, and in which we have to help kids out when they care about something that maybe we don't care as much about. So I think we should start, Cara, with a deep-seated fear that people have about kids and smell, which is that if you have a kid who smells, often you worry that other kids are going to make fun of them and are going to make them feel really crummy about themselves. And that is often the starting point when we hear from parents and how to talk to kids about it, because they worry about that, but they also worry if they, the parent, bring it up, that they're going to make their kid feel crummy and ashamed and bad about themselves. And so
yeah,
the advice here is about walking the line of giving kids the tools and the skills and the products to manage it should they choose without shaming them and making them feel crummy.
I mean, I would make this your practice ground for other conversations that require directness and lots of possible solutions. And so they're much sort of scarier, headier conversations that will come down the road when kids are bigger and older that require the same type of directness. Like, I'm never going to lie to you. I'm going to tell you how I see it, or in this case, how I smell it. And I'm just sharing my input with you. And here are all the different things you can do about it. And this is why I'm sharing that information. Like, it's a little framework that you're going to practice.
And it's so funny because when we did the Drew Barrymore show, we talked about the ways into the conversation and you explain the science and you use humor. And a lot of the comments underneath the reel are like, what are you talking about? Just tell a kid they stink. Like, why are you being so sensitive? Just like throw it out there, right? So I was curious. And so one morning I turned to one of my kids and I was like, oh, did you brush your teeth? Your breath stinks. And they looked at me and they were like, God, thanks, Mom. Like, way to like crush a kid before they even walk out the door for school. And I sort of was like, okay, my instincts that I find a nicer way into some of these conversations are right for my kid. I'm not going to just sort of like take the hose and just like spray them directly. I'm going to like dampen the situation before I go in there.
So here's what works in a lot of homes. It's a version of that with a gentle spin. Like, I'm going to tell you that I can smell your body odor, not because I want to make you feel bad, but because I'm always going to be totally honest and upfront with you. And I hope you will do the same with me, by the way. So just saying, I can smell your armpits from across the room. Happy to help you with some strategies if you would like them. Now, oftentimes that approach is met with something like this. Oh yeah, I'm going to tell you all the things about you that I think are disgusting. And that is fine because they've heard you, right?
They've heard you. Totally. And by the way, there are times when I get hugs from my kids and after like a very long work day of like running around and they're like, oh, Mom, you stink. And I'm like, you are right. I do stink. And I'm going to jump in the shower.
I mean, I always tell my family, if they let me walk around with a piece of lettuce between my teeth, I'm just mad at them.
Game over.
So there isn't a huge difference between that and this in that it's just blunt honesty delivered kindly. You got a piece of lettuce between your teeth. Just wanted to let you know.
I just wanted to look in this. I was like, oh, okay, let me look.
In the Zoom camera.
I mean, so yes, there's different ways to be honest and to use humor and all the science that we just explained, both on like how one uses one's sense of smell and also why and how bodies produce smell.
Okay, we get this question a lot. Cara and Vanessa, can you tell my kid that covering their smell with Axe doesn't work? So I'm here to say you can tell your kid that covering their smell with Axe doesn't work. I mean, you can play this clip from the podcast. Covering your smell with Axe doesn't work. It just smells like Axe on top of body odor.
Right, yep. Because you have to. And so I think the starting point, and we've said this before, but it really bears saying again, kids have to use soap in the shower. They think that just standing under running water is somehow going to clean them and remove odors and all of that. And it doesn't, because if you've ever smelled a kid, you know, 11, 12, 13-year-old kid who showered, you know they did because they have wet hair and droplets of water on their back and they have a towel around their body. And yet, if you stick your nose in their armpits, there's like probably a 30% chance they still smell because they don't use soap.
And here's the science behind the soap, important to know. And we've covered this in other podcasts, but redundancy is fine here because this lesson can get relearned. Soap molecules have one end that's hydrophilic. It loves water. And one end that's hydrophobic. It hates water. So when soap molecules are released in a lather, what happens is the hydrophobic, water-hating ends of the soap, each soap molecule, they encircle a piece of dirt or an oil or a bacteria on the skin because they're trying to get away from the water that is about to come at them or is coming at them, right? So they are running away from the water, the hydrophobic ends. Meanwhile, the hydrophilic ends of the soap are trying to find the water. They love the water. So they're all sticking their tails out trying to find the water. So it's the hydrophobic ends that surround the dirt, or in this case, the bacteria that's generating the body odor smell. And then the water rinses away this sort of, imagine it like a sphere with dirt or bacteria in the middle and all the hydrophobic ends pointing into the center, like a little, I don't know, a little planet or something being surrounded by, and then all the hydrophilic ends poking out towards water, like, hey, water, I'm out here. Come get me, come get me. And the whole thing, it becomes like a little globe that can then be rinsed off the body. So this is a really important thing for kids to be able to visualize. I did a mediocre job of describing it just then verbally, but there are lots of
great
images.
We have a really good TikTok about it, actually, that you did. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can show your kids that, and then they'll be like, oh, that's why soap is important. That's why it works. And then they put two and two together with Vanessa's lesson about bacteria eating the oily or greasy or sweat and the soap washing away the bacteria, and then they'll understand. There are some things that really, truly don't help smell. And then I do want to get into the things that do help other right. than soap. So the things that don't work, I'm kidding, not kidding about Axe. Like Axe is fine. You do you, whatever. But like, don't think that if you use it without being showered, that it magically takes away the odor underneath. It does
right.
not.
This is not, this is not 17th century France. Like just putting right. on a ton of perfume is not going to change things.
Correct.
You have to wash off the smell before putting on good smell.
Correct. Also, for those who are starting to experiment with whether it's fragranced body products or colognes and perfumes, there is this thing that happens to almost every single kid who's exploring using those products where they use way too much and they walk into a room and it's like they clear a room for another reason. So there's that. And there are people in the world, many of them, who are sensitive to those fragrances.
Yeah.
And so when someone is trying to cover up their body odor with another fragrance and they walk into a classroom, if there's a kid who's allergic to that fragrance, suddenly, you know,
Roger gets migraines from certain perfumes and colognes.
And the thing is, the one who's wearing it, it's not that they're trying to be thoughtless, but I think it's important that we educate our kids to think about how other people are going to literally, physically react to what we are wearing, especially right. in a scent.
If a big birthday gift is a, you know, cologne or perfume or Christmas gift or whatever, also teach them how to put it on so that it doesn't overpower everyone else in the room.
Right. Can I say one other thing that doesn't work? And
yes.
then we'll move on. Ignoring synthetic fibers in especially athletic clothing, so sports bras and workout shirts, ignoring that those synthetic fibers smell when you put the garment on does not work. Because the same bacteria that live on our skin, they live much more freely on synthetic fibers than they do on many natural fibers. Not always, but much of the time. And when you wash those athletic garments, you will often find if you sniff them right after washing them that the odor is still there. It's because the bacteria are really entrenched in those fibers and they're still chewing up the sweat and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when a person works out in one of those shirts or tops, the smell comes back like so fast. It's amazing
right.
because you've just given those same bacteria another feast to feast on when you're sweating. So don't over perfume and don't ignore a pre-existing stinky item of clothing. Okay, Vanessa, you go.
So it's, you know, there's the sweat that happens because kids are playing sports or dancing or just being active people. And then there's also the places in the body that just don't air out as well. So particularly with growing, changing bodies that have that thicker, oilier sweat and have the inability to air out because they have new hair growth and they're in tighter clothing, like in the groin or under socks, for example. I mean, Cara, it's not a coincidence that besides our bras, that we have the shorts, which are drop crotch and air out. And I will just say that those shorts get put on in my house every single night by almost every single person living in my house, because it's like they are literally letting their bodies breathe and airing out the parts of their bodies that have been in, you know, Nike Pro shorts under workout clothes, or have been in athletic underwear or whatever it is, and they just want to air them out. So the shorts are incredible. Everybody will find their version of what's great for their bodies to air out. The socks that we make, Car, can you explain the science behind how they work?
Yeah. I mean, they're a miracle. Every pair of socks should work like this, but they don't. Our fibers have zinc embedded in them. Silver works as well. So you may see some products like ours with silver ions, but zinc is incredible because zinc essentially stops, it's antibacterial. It doesn't just stop the bacteria from growing, it can actually kill off some of the bacteria. So you've got sweaty feet in socks, and you've got bacteria that normally live on the skin of the feet. And if you've got zinc in the sock, in the footbed, then you have essentially something that is saying to the bacteria, eat all you want, but either your colony is not getting any bigger or we're actually going to shrink your population. And there's no smell. There's truly no smell. And the zinc outlasts multiple washes. So it's not like it's sprayed on at the end and you get the benefit for a couple of wears and then you're done. The zinc is impregnated in the threads of the sock, and it truly works for the lifetime of the sock. It's incredible, incredible technology. That it is not our technology. It is technology that we incorporated into the sock we make. But Vanessa, it's game changing. It is truly game changing.
And regardless of what socks or pajama bottoms or after school clothing you put on or your kids put on, there are certain principles that we need to adhere to in order to not only keep away smell, but also there's all sorts of like itches and rashes and even infections that can happen if we don't air things out. So for instance, on the feet, kids come home in sweaty socks, often, at least on the East Coast, wet, damp shoes or cleats, right? So they're sort of layer upon layer of damp, sweaty, non-aired out. And for those of you who have athletes who use cleats, often the cleats are made from a synthetic fabric, not leather, unless you're willing to shell out $200 per pair of cleats. And as Car mentioned earlier, the synthetic fabrics hold on to the bacteria. So I literally have several pairs of cleats sitting outside of the livable portion of my house because they smell so bad. And so wet shoes and cleats get newspaper stuffed into them, so they're dry the next time a kid wears them. And of course, when you tell a kid to stuff them with newspaper, they're going to look at you and roll their eyes. And then you're going to say, do you want to keep living in my house? Great. I'm going to teach you how to put the newspaper in.
I thought you were going to say like newspaper. Who gets the newspaper anymore?
I know. We still get the newspaper.
If you don't get the newspaper, you can use baking soda. You can cover the sole of the shoe with a generous, generous pour of baking soda. Shake it out so it's level, so that there's a true white coating across the entire sole of the shoe, and then leave that overnight. And in the morning, turn the shoes upside down over a trash can and clink the heels together, and chunks of baking soda will come out. It is so amazing. It is literally pulling the moisture out of the footbed of the shoe.
And make sure kids are changing their socks, like getting
out. Except socks. I'm not joking. You do not need to change your socks.
We were on vacation and everybody was in close quarters, and so all of everybody's smells were available to everyone else to appreciate. And one member of my family had feet that were not smelling as nice as the fellow family members would have liked. And we all pooled our OOM socks. Like everyone took their pair of OOM socks from their packing and donated it to this member of the family. And this person really only needed one pair of OOM socks for the rest of the vacation because he just wore that one pair and we all got our pairs back because they didn't smell. It was totally amazing.
Crazy. But the airing out that you're talking about is critical because no matter what type of sock you're wearing at the end of a hot, sweaty day, come home, get the socks off. Whatever, it doesn't matter if they've got zinc in them or not, get them off. And if you can convince a kid and use science to help you, but they can actually stick their feet under the tap of a sink or a tub and quickly wash with a little soap and water, dry their foot, including between the toes, and that will go a long way towards preventing fungal infections. Athlete's foot. Fungal infections love the moisture even more than bacteria. And so that's why feet tend to get peely and have a certain, there's a fungal smell that's a little bit sweeter that you can smell with athlete's foot. And air is the best first remedy for that. If air doesn't work, there are other things.
And again, kids may not realize they can and should use soap on their feet.
Yes, between their toes. Soap,
between
soap,
their toes.
Yes.
Around their ankles, maybe where their sock ends and the mud from the field begins.
Now, ankles are an eczema-prone area. So kids who have eczema will often have flares either because of the sock cuff or if they wash too aggressively with soap. So if you're an eczema family, you know the drill and you have to just moisturize and hydrate and hydrate and hydrate as much as possible wherever eczema patches pop up.
It's so interesting. The concept of washing too aggressively is really a foreign concept to me in the context of tweens and teens.
Ask anyone with eczema. Ooh, it's rough.
Well, I have kids with eczema, but they don't get it there. They get it in the creases of elbows and knee bends, which I think very rarely see aggressive washing, certainly not the back of the knees. Kar, let's talk for a minute about the groin area and smells there and washing out there and kind of where we use soap and where we don't use soap and how we prevent things from happening.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting because this is almost a no-go topic and gets a lot of flack when discussed because it's often considered very shaming when people talk about groin smells, or it's very sexualizing, or it's very, right? So it feels very third rail, the whole conversation. It shouldn't. So this is a part of your body. You described it so beautifully, Vanessa. It's a part of your body that's covered in tight clothing, that's got new hair, that's sweating. Of course, there are going to be smells because it's a breeding ground for bacteria.
And
right?
I did not mention my favorite topic, which is vaginal discharge.
And that doesn't have much to do with odor, vulvar and vaginal odor,
but
except
moisture.
To say, yes, it adds more moisture to the equation, right? The vaginal discharge itself doesn't smell, but yes.
And more. What does have odor
tropical
and
forest.
Also adds odor or can add odor is menstrual fluid.
Correct. So a couple of very important points. So the first is products that fight odor, so to speak, like douches and talc powders that are marketed to fight odors. Ask any doctor I know, and they say a hard no to those products. And I am one of those doctors. I am not interested in people introducing scented products in particular or vinegar-based products inside the vulva in order to fight a smell.
Or up the vagina.
Right. And there are so many stories of problems that pediatricians pick up, family practitioners, internists, gynecologists. So these are not great solutions. Talc powder, also like the old style baby powder. Nope, not the solution you want. The solution is washing. The controversy is about soap use around the genitals. The textbook answer is no soap around the genitals, water only. But we've just spent a long time talking about how water only doesn't work. So let me get a little technical. No soap used at an orifice, meaning a hole where there's entry to the body. So for females with vulvas, you use soap on the pubic hair, you use soap on the labia majora, the larger lips, but the inner lips, the labia minora, and the vaginal opening and the clitoris, no soap in those areas because it's very, very irritating. Even the most mild soap can be very, very irritating. For males with penises, soap on the pubic hair, soap is fine on the shaft of the penis, but I would avoid soap at the head of the penis, which is where the urethral opening is, because same. It can get very irritated and very tender. For uncircumcised males, there is a lot written about how you clean underneath the foreskin, some tips for adults to pass along to kids who are learning about self-care here. You retract the foreskin to clean underneath it only if the foreskin is retractable. You never pull hard and force the foreskin back because it can get stuck. It can get swollen and stuck. And then no soap under the foreskin for cleaning. That is just water. So these are some general tips in the groin. This is an area where, other than when there's a lot of moisture, like during a period, usually other people other than romantic partners are not aware of smells. So this is one of those that as self-care matures, people just have to become increasingly aware of cleaning their body because it's not like a parent's going to go, oh, your genitals smell. It's neither appropriate nor is it something parents will generally notice. So this is just one of those very awkward conversations to have at the dinner table. Like, oh, I was listening to this podcast and I never mentioned this. So let's talk about it.
Right. But letting them know where you use soap and where you don't use soap and what kinds of soap is safe and not using scented products and sensitive parts of the body. And the easier conversation is like, make sure you're getting dry underwear on if you're in underwear, or if you're in athletic clothing or wet bathing suits or whatever it is, make sure you get into dry clothing because the dampness and the tightness back to the socks and the fungus on the feet, there's a similar principle in the groin for people with penises and testicles and people with vulvas. It's the same issue. And this is an executive functioning thing. This is something where kids need the information so that they know, okay, I have a game. I've got to change out of my sweaty underwear into dry underwear because then I have an hour-long bus ride before I get back to school and another half an hour before I get home before I can actually shower and put on dry clothing. And the way you tell a kid is like, listen, I know it's a pain and I know you've got a million things on your mind, but you don't want to be sitting in these damp, wet clothes because you could get a fungal infection and that is miserable.
Or you don't have to say that as miserable. You can say, and that is, and then you can have a resource pulled up that shows them what it looks like if you've got that kid.
Which is gross. Or they have it once and you say, I don't think you want to repeat this experience. So let's talk about what we could do differently so that you don't have to go through this again. And can you do 1 minute on yeast infections and whether those only happen to people once they're in puberty?
Land on yeast because that's a perfect place to end
always
this stinky episode. So yeast and fungus are used interchangeably in the sort of parlance of it all. We have these yeast/fungal infections on our bodies a lot, all stages of life. So candida in the mouth, yeast infection in the mouth, babies get thrush on the tongue. That's what that is. Ringworm on the skin. That is a fungal infection on the skin. Looks like a perfect little circle. If you look really closely, there are these teeny tiny little dots on the red face of the ring and sometimes a little flaking in the middle. Athlete's foot. And of course, penile yeast infections, very uncommon. Vaginal yeast infections, much more common. But so yeah, it's not a puberty thing. Yeast and fungal infections are infections that people manage all different stages of life, but they become, vaginal yeast infections in particular, become more common during puberty because the temperature in the groin is going up when there's hair and a more humid environment and tighter fitting underpants, all of which tend to happen around the same time when kids are taking ownership for their own bodies and what they want to wear. Tighter and synthetic material underwear are sort of the two ways that increase heat and humidity in the groin. And when heat and humidity go up, the chance that a yeast/fungus will grow also goes up. So what are you looking for? You're looking for that vaginal discharge to no longer look like, as you describe it so elegantly, Vanessa, raw egg white. That is typical vaginal discharge. Yeast infection of vaginal discharge looks like cottage cheese. I'm sorry to the cottage cheese industry to be describing it that way because I'm a big fan of your product, but that is what it looks like. And sometimes yeast infections can feel itchy or burny. So that's what you're looking for. If you have questions, don't go to Dr. Google. Either call your healthcare provider or, how's this for wrapping the podcast, become a member of Less Awkward, and you can find all this information on our site, or you could ask the Awkward Bot.
Did you can't believe
go full circle
how much we have talked about vaginal discharge on this podcast and in our book. You're going to be maybe slightly concerned about how much we are on a two-woman mission to normalize conversations about vaginal discharge and fluids and smells of all kinds. And on that note, Cara,
happy National Sense of Smell Day.
I know this was a deep pull, but thank you for hanging in there with us on National Sense of Smell Day. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. You can email us with questions, feedback, or episode requests at podcast@lessawkward.com.
If you want to learn more about what we do to make this whole stage of life less awkward for everyone involved, our parent membership, our school health ed curriculum, our keynote talks, and more are all at lessawkward.com.
And if you want products that make puberty so much more comfortable, visit myoomla.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.